The failure of drug war is glaringly obvious to judges, cops, wardens, prosecutors, and millions more now calling for decriminalization, legalization, the end of prohibition. Let us investigate the Century of Lies.
Hello, and welcome to Century of Lies. I'm your host, Doug McVeigh, editor of drugwarfacts.org. The Commission on Narcotic Drugs held a set of intersessional thematic meetings October 16th through 18th at the UN's headquarters in Vienna, Austria. For the first time ever, the meetings were webcast via YouTube through the account of the Secretariat of the Governing Bodies of the UN Office on Drugs and Crime. Loyal listeners know that I am a longtime critic of the CND and UNODC for their lack of transparency. Webcasting via YouTube was a major advance. Kind of. The videos are unlisted. They don't appear in YouTube search results or on Google search. They're not on the Secretariat's account page. Neither UNODC nor the CND have posted links to them. You have to have the link in order to view the video. So, if you go to my Facebook page, which is facebook.com/Douglas Allen McVeigh, you will find the links there for all 3 days. As of the time of this recording, the videos are still online. Each day's video starts with the opening of the morning session and continues until the afternoon session ends, which means they're each a little over 8 hours long, including the 2-hour lunch break in the middle. The International Drug Policy Consortium has a blog with a very good summary of every CND meeting at cndblog.org that you can use as a guide to each day's session in order to find presentations from any particular agency or country in which you may be interested. On this week's show, we're going to hear a little of the audio from this recent set of intersessional meetings. First, we're going to hear about a growing concern: new psychoactive substances and amphetamine-type stimulants. Martin Reidelhuber, PhD, is an illicit synthetic drugs expert with the UNODC Laboratory and Scientific Section. He manages the Global Synthetics Monitoring, Analysis, Reporting, and Trends, or SMART, program, which supports countries to generate, analyze, report, and use information on illicit synthetic drugs and new psychoactive substances. The SMART program also runs the UNODC Early Warning Advisory on New Psychoactive Substances, a web-based information platform on NPS Emergence. Here's Dr. Reidelhuber.
The topic of my presentation is the ATS market 10 years after the 2009 plan of action. More synthetic drugs of higher purity and for less money. Is that possible? Is it happening? What is going on the synthetic drug market? Long before the emergence of new psychoactive substances, we heard about them earlier today, new forms of information technology, the internet, contributed to a rapid spread of knowledge on precursors and manufacturing techniques of amphetamine-type stimulants in a more and more globalized and interconnected world. Countries which used to measure methamphetamine seizures in kilograms are now measuring them in tons. The capacity of clandestine laboratories for synthetic drugs increased. And forensic laboratories in some countries, they are reporting a purity of methamphetamine, which is so high that they can no longer detect the traces and impurities in samples, which can be used for profiling, for example. And our colleague from the EMCDDA reported earlier that the MDMA dose in an ecstasy tablet is higher than ever and doubled in recent years. So synthetic drugs are a game changer. They can be manufactured anywhere in the world, and they are manufactured practically anywhere in the world. Their manufacture is relatively simple. It can be done at a small scale, at a large scale, industrial scale. And traffickers can choose between a wide range of precursors and synthesis routes. So already in 1998, so that's 20 years ago, the General Assembly realized that synthetic drugs pose a specific set of challenges. At that time, mainly amphetamine-type stimulants. They were indeed a game changer in a world long dominated by plant-based drugs like cannabis, heroin, and cocaine. 10 years later, in 2009, the absence of a global monitoring mechanism for synthetic drugs made it difficult to understand that new situation and the complexity and dynamics of the growing illicit market for synthetic drugs. As a consequence, member states, you, resolved to take measures to advance the monitoring of illicit synthetic drugs in the framework of the Political Declaration and Plan of Action of 2009. A global monitoring mechanism was set up around the same time by UNODC, the UNODC Global Smart Program, which I have the pleasure to manage. The program has since contributed significantly to improve the quantity and quality of information on the illicit synthetic drug market. Several elements of that 2009 plan of action were then later included in 2016 in the UNGAS outcome document, particularly the operational recommendations to improve the detection and identification capacity. Mexico earlier today mentioned the importance of forensic laboratories and early warning systems to detect new and emerging trends. Now let's look at the market development 10 years ago. In 2008, the quantity of amphetamine-type seizures was just 60 tons in 2008. Since then, it has increased four times to 2,061 tons in 2017. The seizure amounts of all the main amphetamine-type stimulants, methamphetamine, amphetamine, and ecstasy, have increased, all three, strongly. But the expansion is mainly driven, as you see in the graph, by one drug, and that's methamphetamine. Let's take a closer look at methamphetamine. Methamphetamine is clearly becoming the primary amphetamine-type stimulant of concern. Quantities of that drug have increased more than seven times. And I really undertook a great effort with the help of a 1980s pocket calculator to make sure that the size of these circles is approximately displaying a sevenfold increase. Recent data, and we heard that from my colleague from Bangkok and Southeast Asia, indicates a further increase of methamphetamine seizures in 2018 and as well in 2019, as far as we know. This increase affects the known or the main traditional regions, Asia and Americas, but also other regions like Europe, Oceania, and Africa. Among methamphetamine, one particular form of methamphetamine known as ice or crystal meth, crystalline methamphetamine, is particularly increasing. And this is the form of methamphetamine which is associated with a particularly high risk, health risk for users. So are these growing seizure amounts a reflection of more effective law enforcement activities? Angela Mayer this morning already raised that question. So did all the efforts of countries, maybe in collaboration with the many UNODC programs we have, did they have an effect on the market? Are they working? Are all these efforts making a larger dent into the illicit synthetic drug market? We hope so, and I think so. However, At the same time, we notice that the prices for methamphetamine and other synthetic drugs are actually falling. Without doubt, growing amounts of methamphetamine and other synthetic drugs are taken off the market by law enforcement. But assuming a stable demand, this should lead to price increases or a lower purity as traffickers try to compensate for these losses and charge higher risk premiums. Instead, prices, for example, for methamphetamine pills, so-called YABA pills in Southeast Asia, are decreasing, while the purity remains stable. In Thailand, in 2008, YABA pills were sold for $6 to $10 a piece. Now, they can be bought for as little as $3, half the price. In North America, prices of crystal meth decreased significantly, while the purity at the same time increased. This is counterintuitive, actually. A pure gram of crystal meth in the US cost $220 in 2008. You can get the same amount, same purity now, for just $70, one third. In Europe, ecstasy tablets have a much higher MDMA content, as we heard just earlier today. And users can buy these much stronger tablets for practically the same euro amounts. And the price of such a high-dose ecstasy tablet is within pocket money range of a teenager and cheaper than a drink per user. So there is a dynamic and growing market for synthetic drugs. And countries are beginning to feel the impact with increasing demand for treatment, for example, and a larger number of fatalities associated to the use of synthetic drugs. So there is more and higher purity methamphetamine, amphetamine, and ecstasy available in a larger number of countries and for less money than before. The Global Mechanism for Monitoring Synthetic Drugs, the Global Smart Program, has been able to reveal and communicate this development. So while information gaps still exist, it is also true that there has never been more complete and up-to-date information available on the synthetic drug market. So how can member states, how can we, UNODC, the international community, NGOs, make better use of this information to develop responses? And how could such responses look like? We're just at the beginning of this discussion, yet there are maybe some lessons learned, particularly from the emergence of NPS, new psychoactive substances, when the international community took fast and effective action. Capacity building. Awareness raising and capacity building has improved the availability of information on synthetic drug trends and the ability of law enforcement in many countries to detect and identify drug shipments. So there's no doubt that member states are able to identify many, many more new psychoactive substances, for example, than just a few years ago. And UNODC has played a role here, but I really want to highlight the tremendous efforts many member states have undertaken to increase the capacity of their forensic laboratories and law enforcement to be able to detect and identify these substances. International collaboration has been key for this success, to exchange knowledge, methods, good practices. Bilateral, multilateral cooperation, interagency collaboration between UN agencies led to concrete results, such as the UN toolkit on synthetic drugs. We're going to hear more about that in the coming days. We will hear many more examples of collaboration, for example, between UNODC, the World Health Organization, and INCB and other partners. Early warning systems at the national, regional, international level were a decisive element to make available information on emerging trends early on to take action. In this context, I'd like to emphasize the critical importance of forensic labs, scientific laboratories. It was mentioned earlier today, and it was already mentioned in the 2009 action plan. And I know there are persons in the room, colleagues, counterparts from member states, who have personally contributed to make available information on new psychoactive substances, for example, to the UNODC early warning advisory, information on the chemical nature of these substances, information on their pharmacology, on their toxicity. And this information is available, is being used by member states. It has informed legislation, for example, generic legislation in a number of countries. And just to give you a concrete example, because it is a recent example, I think Argentina was one of the most recent countries to introduce generic legislation on a group of new psychoactive substances. And a counterpart in the capital informed me that the UNODC early warning advisory, our information system, was important and informed their decision. And it led them to information available from other member states like the United Kingdom, for example, which had already experiences with such generic definitions of new psychoactive substances. So this information exchange is working. Yet we know from our interaction with many countries that the knowledge and the capacity available to formulate responses to synthetic drugs and their precursors, particularly at the field level, is far from satisfactory. Field identification tools need to be modernized and made available much more widely. Information needs to be collected and shared more quickly and with a wider range of stakeholders, including both the law enforcement and health actors, state and private sector, and non-governmental organizations. I would like to highlight one publication which we issued just yesterday, the Global Smart Update, which has much more detailed information on what I've been presenting here in a very, very condensed form. You can take your copy outside at the opioid strategy booth. Let me conclude by saying that we're looking forward to continuing this discussion with you. Thank you very much for the opportunity to speak to you today. Thank you.
That was Martin Reidelhuber, PhD. He's an illicit synthetic drugs expert with the UN Office on Drugs and Crime. He manages the Global Synthetics Monitoring, Analysis, Reporting, and Trends, or SMART program, which supports countries to generate, analyze, report, and use information on illicit synthetic drugs and new psychoactive substances. He was speaking to the Commission on Narcotic Drugs at their thematic intersessional meetings in mid-October in Vienna, Austria. You're listening to Century of Lies. I'm your host, Doug McVeigh, editor of DrugWarFacts.org. Next, we're going to hear from Gilberto Guerra, MD. Dr. Guerra is chief of the Drug Prevention and Health Branch at the UNODC.
Yesterday, there was a question, particularly coming from the delegation of Pakistan, about why we have this record level of use of drugs, why we have this continuous increase also on the side of demand, not only on the side of supply. And I promised that I wanted to bring something to you to meditate about this issue that is very important. Before, the ambassador of Mexico was very, very punctual in remembering the text, the sentence of the ANGAS document, ANGAS outcome document, saying that drug dependence is a complex multifactorial health disorder. Complex is, I think, the main word we have to take in our mind, because the complexity is really providing us the key of interpretation. We cannot have a unilateral interpretation of a substance use disorder, thinking, I have the recipe, this is the problem, I can solve the problem easily. There is nothing easy, it is a great complex problem. And let me start saying that drugs per se are modifying the brain, changing the capacity of the genes of the brain to be activated or silenced, activated or disactivated. But also the condition of the environment are able to change the brain with changes in gene expression. And mixed together this complexity, you obtain the kind of vulnerability that we see in our people affected. You see, it's no more understandable as a phenomenon at the level of the synaptic exchange of neurotransmitters and the receptors on the neurons. But it's something that is going to undermine completely the way the genes are transcripted in RNA, and this in neurotransmitters, in receptors, and in substances in the brain. But look to this article of 2018, 1 year ago, saying that the early care environment, the way you have a relationship with your parents, your person around you, when you are very young, before the 3 years of age, are going to change gene expression, particularly related to the level of attachment. I wanted to start with you to analyze one component that would be the component of vulnerability, the complex vulnerability, the issue of attachment, how much you feel you can stay with your parents as a secure condition, a well-organized condition, without being anxious, without being in a condition of affected by a condition of insecurity. And look to this experiment, already old experiment of 1997, You can take children and tell them, do you want a candy immediately? If you don't want a candy immediately, you can have a good piece of cake in 15 minutes if you are able to wait. But if you are able to wait 2 hours, you can have a great toy of Lego. You can see a Lego toy that is very appealing, but you have to wait 2 hours. And you see, there are children that have this ability to delay gratification. Inability to delay gratification. And if you go to check what is related, with which situation is related, this inability to delay their perception of the reward is related to the attachment with the mother, attachment with the parents. And it is very reasonable, very understandable. The secure organized attachment means I can wait, I trust my parents, no need to be concerned. If the Lego is there and my mother promised me that I will have the Lego, I can trust my mother and wait for the Lego. The poor child who has an insecure attachment condition has to catch immediately something because he is not sure that the mother or the father will be there to guarantee this for him. It's the basis, it's the engine producing a condition of impulsiveness. When you go to check the college students many years after, those who are using more drugs, those who are started using drugs very early tend to discount the value of future hypothetical rewards. So if they do this reward discounting, they cannot wait. And this is predicting not only use of drugs, but also mismanagement of money in gambling activities. It's predicting, as a sort of operative measure of impulsiveness, many other problematic behaviors such as bullying represented in this slide. An author recently, again 1 year ago, mentioned the fact that addiction we see growing, it could be a sort of expression of an attachment disorder existing behind. But what is one of the most severe and broken condition of attachment that we can mention? It is the condition of maltreatment. And this maltreatment through condition of externalizing pathways, externalizing behavior means conduct disorder, oppositional behavior, etc., is bringing the children to use drugs in the early adolescence, sometimes still as children. And also neglect, the condition of neglect, sometimes institutionalized neglect is inducing to have a condition of anxiety and depression, increasing the risk of substance use disorder, related to the fact that the attachment condition was not there. There was a condition of absence of the love of the family. Again, what is the most terrible broken attachment condition? Sexual abuse. You see, among sex people, children with sexual abuse, particularly women, 30% of them have reported childhood sexual abuse, and 8.4 intercourse, intercourse. But look to these recent articles. One is 19 and 15 and 18, saying strong evidence for a general link between substance use disorder and insecure attachment. And we can speak about also specificity. These authors say heroin can be considered an emotional substitute for lacking coping strategies that you did not learn during your broken attachment process. Cannabis used to support existing deactivating and distancing strategy that are other strategies to cope with your lack of attachment condition. And we have demonstrated, for example, in heavy cannabis users, a decrease of reaction to the negative emotions that could be related, I go to the previous slide, can be related again to this existing deactivating and distancing strategies that were created by lack of attachment during infancy. Alcoholism has been found again related to the attachment anxiety condition. And another name you can give to this lack of capacity to wait related to the attachment condition is tolerance to frustration. When you have no capacity to wait, you have intolerance to frustration. You see, it's not for sure that the next fish will come easily when you go to fish. We have to exercise your patience and being able to control your behavior to wait for the reward. Also implicit, mommy and daddy, this is a very fun article saying, mommy and daddy and addiction, implicit insecure attachment is associated with the substance using college students. And implicit attachment, also not what you report in a questionnaire, but implicit attachment that you don't control, sometimes is related to use of drugs. Let me go on the social experts that are interfering with this. We have this evidence, for example, from the study in Brazil, but we have many evidence in French studies, and yesterday I mentioned also monitoring in the future, that the socioeconomic status is going to increase the risk of substance use. The low socioeconomic status is going to increase the risk of substance misuse. And when the family income is going down, the substance use disorder are going up. But there is also an article saying socioeconomic status associated with insecure attachment, parenting in poverty. When your parenting is happening in an environment, in a society that is very poor, very problematic, very degrading, this condition is going to affect the attachment and in consequences making people more vulnerable for drugs. This study is the study I mentioned yesterday with the people from affluent families coming to experiment more with cannabis. But when we have to see who is continuing use of cannabis with regular use, daily use and dependence, these are the children of the poor. So my final message, family, school and community attachment as a sort of recovery recipe, recovery the capacity to be a person, to control your behavior, to establish good relationship with anxiety and problematic condition, because you are encountering, after many years of a problematic situation, family, school, and community attachment as essential basis for prevention and treatment of substance use disorder. Thank you for your attention.
That was Dr. Gilberto Guerra. He's chief of the Drug Prevention and Health Branch at the UNODC. He was speaking before the Commission on Narcotic Drugs at their recent set of thematic intersessional meetings in mid-October at the UN's offices in Vienna, Austria. And for now, that's it. I want to thank you for joining us. You have been listening to Century of Lies. We're a production of the Drug Truth Network for the Pacifica Foundation Radio Network on the web at drugtruth.net. We'll be back in a week with 30 more minutes of news and information about drug policy reform and the failed war on drugs. This is Doug McVeigh saying so long. So long! For the Drug Truth Network, this is Doug McVeigh asking you to examine our policy of drug prohibition, the century of lies. Drug Truth Network programs archived at the James A. Baker III Institute for Public Policy.